I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that likes to eat liver and fava beans, all washed down with a nice Chianti. We prefer our liver to come from a cow, though, just saying. You may notice that we're missing our resident diva, Mary Pat Truthart, this week. That's because she's recovering from a surgical procedure, which, though not particularly serious, has her in a fair amount of pain. Feel free to express your concern for her, as I have, by donating to Spokane Public Radio. Anyway, Nathan and I are still here, and we're going to discuss The Father, a film adapted by French-born filmmaker Florian Zeller from his own stage play. Nominated for 6 Oscars, including Best Picture, The Father is anchored by an Oscar-nominated lead performance by Anthony Hopkins. We'll talk about Zeller's film, and then we'll run down Hopkins' stellar career. Let's begin, though, by looking at what could be described as a real-life horror story. Everyone is afraid of something, which is a human trait that the movies take advantage of. But unlike the movies, which tend to focus on such horror tropes as vampires, zombies, or paranormal entities, not to mention your everyday average serial killer, real life offers up a number of different types of horror all on its own, much of which involves physical failure. That's the kind of horror that Florian Zeller explores in his film, The Father, which besides being nominated for a Best Picture Oscar, has garnered 6 nominations in all, including Best Supporting Actress for Olivia Colman and Best Actor for Anthony Hopkins. Hopkins plays the title character, also named Anthony, who's being taken care of, not that he thinks he needs her, by his daughter Anne, played by Colman. But maybe what we see, or more accurately, what Anthony sees, is not really what's happening. Because Zeller, who adapted the screenplay from his own stage play, keeps shifting perspectives, and those perspectives concern the rest of the cast, from Olivia Williams to Imogene Poots, Rufus Sewell to Mark Gatiss. In the end, though, it's Hopkins who captures and holds our attention in his skillful depiction of a man who is alternately defensive and aggressive, playful and confused, hesitant, and in the end, lost in a child's worst vision of a nightmare.
Yeah, reading the logline for this movie when it first started getting acclaim at film festivals last year, I just kind of assumed it was going to be some kind of noble melodrama. But you're totally right. This is a horror film, and it is about disorientation, and it's about the loss of identity. And just, you know, the idea of succumbing to a disease that robs you of even understanding that you have a disease. You know, we see Anthony kind of float in and out of lucidity, and there are moments where he seems to understand where he is and who he is, and moments where he clearly doesn't. And there's something really terrifying about that. And the last movie that I can remember that handled this sort of thing, narrative film that handled this sort of thing this well, was Sarah Polley's film Away From Her, which had Julie Christie, who was Oscar nominated for that film, as a woman with Alzheimer's. But that was about how a marriage is impacted when one person doesn't recognize the other, because that film is as much about Christie's husband, who is played by Gordon Pinsent. And if you haven't seen Away From Her, it's a terrific film and you should check it out. But this movie, The Father, goes a different direction, because we are, with the exception of a few scenes throughout the film, we are firmly entrenched within the POV of the Anthony Hopkins character for most of the movie. And Zeller, and I haven't seen the play, but I wonder if he uses the same stylistic devices in the play, because here he kind of uses the film and the style of the film to replicate that confusion that the Hopkins character is going through.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point that we need to emphasize here, is that It's not only Anthony who is experiencing this. Zeller makes sure we are experiencing it with him.
Right. It is an experiential thing, because a character will disappear mid-scene, like they'll go into the next room and then they're not there anymore, or they will shapeshift into other people. So there are times where his daughter is played by Olivia Colman, and our sense of reality is that Olivia Colman is his daughter, but there are times where she's played by Olivia Williams, a different Olivia actress, who we then see later on in another role entirely, and the pieces kind of click together for us. But in the moment, we're just as disoriented as he is. And also, there's a really clever use of set design here, because the apartment in which this film is set, the design of it subtly changes and then and moves around. Sometimes it seems a lot bigger than it actually is, or a lot more claustrophobic than we think it is. And we're never quite sure, you know, what's the version of reality that we're supposed to be on here. And I was reminded of something like Shutter Island, the Martin Scorsese film, where the ground was kind of always moving underneath the protagonist's feet. But in that film, I mean, that was sort of a kind of a potboiler thriller mystery. This is a very serious consideration of its themes. And I think it works really well. It sounds like it could be exploitative, this idea of I'm going to explore this disease and I'm going to do it through you know, set design and style and editing. But I found it really empathetic. I mean, by the end of this movie, you feel for this guy so much.
I absolutely agree with you. And The Father is one of those movies that, had I seen it last year, would have been on my top 10 list.
And me too.
It would have been one of my favorite films of the year. Not because when you think of your favorite films of the year, you think of films that you come out, you go, oh man, it's a reaffirmation of life, it's wonderful. But I'm talking about a movie that profoundly moves you, that takes you into another experience and forces you to feel what the characters are feeling. And I wanted to add to what you were saying about the change in the apartment. As the movie went on, and it's difficult to talk about this because, you know, you and I came into this movie totally not knowing what the experience was going to be. So I really don't want to give away too much for people, because I wanted to work on them. But the differences in the apartments to me were so subtle that I didn't even notice them at first, until people started referencing, you know, well, whose apartment is this? Is it yours? Is it mine? And then the other part of that is looking out the window, which becomes almost a complete mm-hmm. character in and of itself, and which is what happens. The denouement of the movie is a look out the window. And it's, I can't say enough about this film. And as for the notion of it being exploitative, well, anymore, you get in danger whatever you say about anything anymore. So I'm sure there are people, particularly in the disability community, who might think that this is, well, if you really want to see something like this, go see the movie Still Alice with Julianne Moore. You know, I mean, that's a movie that's respectful, blah, blah, blah. This one, no.
Yeah, this is 10 times the movie that Still Alice was. No offense to Still Alice, which I think is fine. I think this is taking what that movie was about, the themes that movie was about, and elevating it into something that we've never quite seen before, at least in the realms of this sort of story. And
yeah, I totally agree.
I want to go back to sort of the, you know, the stylistic devices that he's using here in terms of, you know, kind of disorienting us, because about a half hour into this movie, I thought, have I seen everything this movie has to offer? I think I kind of get what it's going for. And I think and there's still, you know, an hour and a half left. Like, am I going to be bored by the end of this? And I have to say, I was totally absorbed in it all the way through. And I think a lot of it has to do with not only the style and the direction and the writing, but also the performances, because we haven't really touched on those yet. Obviously, Hopkins is getting the most praise here, and deservedly so. And we're going to be talking more about him. So yeah. I want to talk about some of the supporting characters, because Olivia Colman as his daughter, that seems like such a thankless role, but she's so good, because you see her struggling, because here's this man that she loves so dearly, and there are moments where she doesn't recognize him. I mean, he mm-hmm. obviously doesn't recognize her at times, but she doesn't recognize him. And there's something that's so tragic about that. And she knows that her father's illness is beyond her control, and that it's probably only going to get worse, but she also doesn't want to give him up. She doesn't want to relinquish control to somebody else. And then her husband, Rufus Sewell, another seemingly thankless role that has a lot more subtlety and shading to it than you would expect. He also clearly doesn't want his wife's father to be, you know, sent away to a home. But at the same time, he resents having this guy in his apartment and starts to wonder, is he playing up these symptoms in order to just poke at me? And I think that at first you're kind of taken aback by that reaction, but it's like, I think that probably does happen. Yeah. I think that there is resentment tied to illness in a lot of ways.
And concern at the same time for his wife. Yeah.
And that character is played so well.
Yeah, it there's so much complexity in what is going on here. I mean, you haven't even mentioned Olivia Williams, who ends up having to play two completely different roles. In the end, it's like, are you the tough person, or are you the compassionate person, or are you both? And what is needed there? It's I can't say enough of this film. I would argue that this is one of the best performances Hopkins has ever done. In that final scene, it is
I wanted to bring that up.
Frightening. It is so frightening.
Well, that final scene.
And yet, amazingly empathetic, terrifying. I just can't say enough about it.
Well, we almost watch him regress all the way back to childhood.
Exactly.
All while, you know, his adult sensibilities are trying to hang on and trying to take over. We see that inner turmoil there.
Yeah.
And it's such a remarkable feat of emotion and physicality. And I agree. In a lot of other years, this would be a shoo-in for the Oscar. I don't think he's going to win it this year.
I don't think so either.
But you're right. It is a tremendous piece of acting.
Right. And that was The Father. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the movie career of Anthony Hopkins. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Public Radio is about connections. We connect you with the rest of our community and the world. We connect you with the most important news, be it COVID, weather, community news, or politics. Connection is our business and our mission, but we can't do it without your help. When you give to Public Radio, a membership, an extra gift, a gift in your will, or in whatever way you can, you take some responsibility for helping keep your community connected. So please pick up the phone or go to the website and give a gift to the community with a gift to Public Radio. SpokanePublicRadio.org. Continue the connection.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Nathan Weinbinder and I discussed the Oscar-nominated film, The Father. Let's now take a look at the movie career of that movie's lead actor, Anthony Hopkins. Hopkins was born in 1937 in Wales, not very far from where Richard Burton was born. He studied at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama before moving a few years later to London's Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. He didn't begin his career as a stage actor, though, before he was invited by Laurence Olivier to join London's Royal National Theatre. But by 1967, he got a little tired of playing the same roles every night, so he decided to move to TV and film. And it wasn't until 1968 in Anthony Harvey's film, The Lion in Winter, in which he starred opposite two screen legends, Peter O'Toole and Katharine Hepburn, that his film career got his first big boost. And let me say, that film career really took off. It wasn't until 1992 that he got nominated for an Academy Award, and he won right at the very beginning. He won for Silence of the Lambs, in which he played the most chilling Hannibal Lecter ever. Then in 1994, he was nominated for Remains of the Day. 1996, he was nominated Best Actor in Nixon. 1998, he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Amistad. In 2020, he was nominated along with Jonathan Pryce for Best Supporting Actor for The Two Popes. And now he's been nominated for Best Actor for The Father. And as you pointed out, Nathan, I think this is probably going to go to Chadwick Boseman for no other reason, because he was really good and because he died. But Anthony Hopkins in any other year probably would have been the odds-on favorite.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to look at that career, the idea that he started way back in the 60s but wasn't recognized by the Academy until the 90s. That's such a long time to be working. Not that Oscar recognition is, you know, the barometer that we should all be looking at for excellence, right. But you know, he was turning in Oscar worthy performances before that. It just took him a while to catch on. I also want to say about The Silence of the Lambs, which I actually rewatched fairly recently, totally independent of this.
Almost a perfect movie.
It's an incredible movie. And Anthony Hopkins, he won for best leading actor. He's on screen for, I believe, 23 or 24 minutes of that 2-hour movie. He is arguably a supporting character in that movie.
Yeah.
But Hannibal, he's not even the main villain of The Silence of the Lambs. But Hannibal Lecter looms over that film, and it's because of Anthony Hopkins' performance. He plays it almost as this kind of wizened old man, as this animal in a cage. And it's really this front that he has put up, that Hannibal Lecter has put up, because he knows it makes him not more approachable, because I don't know if Hannibal Lecter is capable of being approachable, but certainly he's putting on airs. It's a performance unto itself. And then when we finally see him escape, we see what he's really capable of.
If you go on YouTube, you can find his explanations as to what he did to create that role. One of them is he doesn't blink throughout the entire time he's on screen, not once. I mean, he's got this dead eye stare at Jodie Foster, who plays Clarice, and it is a chilling, chilling, chilling performance.
Well, and you know, they say that acting is all about reacting. And I just want to throw out that part of the reason that Hopkins' performance in that film is so good is because of Jodie Foster, who is also, I mean, that's maybe her best performance in that film. And the scenes between them just have this electricity that you rarely see in movies, let alone horror movies.
And they're never in the same frame. They're never in the same frame. It's always
except for, you know, like when she's looking in the glass and he's reflected back and vice versa.
Right.
It's fascinating. And it's interesting that we've gotten other Hannibal Lecters in the wake of Anthony Hopkins. Brian Cox was obviously before in Manhunter.
Right. In Manhunter,
And then Hopkins played him two more times in a remake of Manhunter called Red Dragon and in Hannibal. But we had Mads Mikkelsen on TV playing Hannibal Lecter. And it's interesting because it's a totally different interpretation of the character, because I don't think you could ever try and do what Anthony Hopkins did, try and duplicate it. It just doesn't work. And when I was thinking about Hopkins as an actor, why he is such a powerful presence on the screen, I was just thinking about the fact that, I mean, he does come out of Shakespeare, obviously. He studied with Laurence Olivier, and he's worked alongside pretty much every legendary performer there is. So he has this gravitas about him, and he can perform, you know, these powerful soliloquies and really sell them. But he'll occasionally take on these almost borderline camp roles, like Hannibal Lecter, or like one of my other favorite Hopkins performances as the maybe deranged ventriloquist in Richard Attenborough's film Magic from 1978. Yes. That's another one of those performances that, like Lecter, I think if he had stepped one inch too far this way or one inch too far that way, it wouldn't have worked. It would have been laughable. And yet he tears into this potentially silly part as if he's doing King Lear, and it's completely believable. And so I think that's what appeals to me about someone like Hopkins, is that he can play Hannibal Lecter, and then he can play Richard Nixon, and then he can play John Quincy Adams, and then he can play a Pope, and we believe him in every iteration.
And
that takes a lot more range than you would think. He makes it look easy.
I totally agree. Mary Pat and I were watching Star Trek The Next Generation the other day, you know, old ones, and I was remarking to her that the reason why that worked so well was because of Patrick Stewart, because Patrick Stewart brings to a cheesy set design, cheesy scripts, this sense of Shakespearean gravitas. And that's exactly what these Shakespearean trained British actors can do. They can make the worst stuff seem serious and worth watching.
I want to bring up another one of my favorite Anthony Hopkins performances, which I was telling Dan about this off mic. I actually saw for the first time last night, and that's in The Remains of the Day from 1993.
Yes.
Now, I had thought that I had seen this movie before and thought it was a snooze fest, but that's because I was confusing it with Howard's End, which is another movie starring Emma Thompson and Anthony Hopkins, directed by the Merchant Ivory team, that came out literally a year before The Remains of the Day. So I was confusing them in my head. So I went back to watch Remains of the Day, realizing I'd never seen it before, and it floored me. It is one of the best movies I've seen. And what's so great about Anthony Hopkins' performance in that, he plays a lifelong butler living in this isolated British estate. Even his father was a butler, and probably his, you know, his father before that. And it's this performance that is a study in repression. Yep. And of course, a lot of British films are studies in repression, but this is one of the best ones I've seen. And the way that Hopkins plays that role, because Emma Thompson comes in as a housekeeper in this estate and clearly has some kind of feelings for the Hopkins character. And we're never quite sure if Hopkins realizes it, if he wants to reciprocate, or if he's just totally closed off from any kind of human emotion. And then by the end of the film, which is set a couple decades in the future, we finally understand what this guy has been experiencing and feeling for all of these years when he hasn't been allowed to experience or feel anything. And I was thinking about how difficult it is to show any kind of humanity in that sort of role, because he does have to be almost like a robot, this unfeeling, uncaring observer who's just there to help and to not react and to not think. And the fact that Hopkins makes that into a human character is remarkable to me.
Yeah. And the key scene there is a scene with Emma Thompson and him. He's got a book in his hand and she's trying to, so what is in the book? Well, she's trying desperately to get into him to find out what he's ticked. And he is so protected and he won't let her see it. And it's all in his eyes. Everything, you see everything, all his repression there.
And then later on in the future, he writes to her and says, you know, the estate I'm working at, we're looking for a housekeeper. Would you think of coming back? And they reunite for the first time in years. And they have this very formal, very friendly lunch. And they go to say their formal goodbyes. And there's a scene where they're in the rain together and all of the emotion that they've both been repressing for years comes out, but they can't say anything. Yeah. They just show it in their faces and they show it in their body language. And it's some of the best acting I've ever seen. Yep. And I can't believe that I'd never seen this movie until recently. Everyone was holding out on me and talking about how good Anthony Hopkins is in The Remains of the Day. I feel like a fool.
For the first time, though, right?
Well, for the first time today.
And that was our look at the film career of Anthony Hopkins. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder and I discussed the movie for which he's been nominated as Best Actor in 2020, 2021 now, The Father. Mary Pat Truthart wasn't with us, but we expect to have her back soon. Until then, let's do the usual and thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. And thank you to our loyal listeners, whom we invite back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from, of course, Anthony Hopkins himself. I have a punishing workout regimen. Every day I do 3 minutes on a treadmill. Then I lie down, drink a glass of vodka, and smoke a cigarette. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.